What up?
I was blowing my nose like, okay, it's showtime.
We didn't get our awesome intro, but man, what a start. Wait. It's like we caught you on candid camera.
Wait. Can I do it now? Can I just play it now? Let's do it. Let's go.
Benzinga's Cannabis Capital Conference returns to Miami Beach on April 11th and 12th. I may be biased, but I'm telling you, this event is a can't miss. Join us to build the foundation of your next game-changing deal with CEOs and decision-makers from leading companies in the industry. We're talking about the next wave of businesses, strategies from the most profitable businesses, and exactly what investors are looking for in a challenging market. Go to bzcannabis.com to meet your next investor, co-founder, and new friends. A little pro tip from me, right now tickets are $1,000 cheaper than prices at the door. Get yours now. Oh man, I love you, Bobby. Y'all, what's up? Welcome in. It is a Thirsty Thursday. We are here. You know, actually, funny story about that. Thirsty, I hope we've been live this whole time. But Thirsty Thursday, my neighborhood clubhouse is doing a Thirsty Thursday for 55 and over. I am not invited. I feel offended. But that being said, what's up, y'all? Welcome to Cannabis Insider with me, Elliot Lane. Follow me, Elliot Lane 10. But with the one you're here for, Javier Jase, the Argentinian action figure himself, the one who is verified on Twitter and Instagram. I am not, but he is the one you want to hear from. That being said, Javi, what's up, man? How's it going?
Doing great. Is my mic working okay?
It's a little robotty. You gotta fix that.
Every time it's a lottery.
There we go.
A new Mac and a new mic. It just hates me, dude.
We have your dulcet tones. Now you sound great. But Javi, man, I have a bone to pick with Twitter. We literally got off our show, and then AdCan comes out and announces that they're advertising for cannabis.
I like that. It deserves like a news headline, you know, like our top story tonight. Twitter's updating policy is making headlines, and it's all thanks to Elon Musk.
Yeah, the company owned by
the South African billionaire has announced that the social media platform will now allow paid ads for CBD and THC products as well as other cannabis-related products and services.
Yeah, I'll take the win on this one. I'm just going to say it. I'm probably going to piss somebody off with this. I'm sorry, but take the win.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is a great piece of news. Get excited, get happy. But I've seen all these headlines and stories be like, yeah, but you can't advertise marijuana products directly. And I'm like, oh, for the love of God. Like, there's always going to be restrictions on marijuana. Always.
I mean, in this specific case, right, like under the updated policy, advertisers must be licensed and pre-authorized by Twitter. They only may target jurisdictions in which they are licensed to promote these products and services online. Of course, they cannot promote to minors, and they cannot promote or offer the sale of cannabis.
Sounds in line with legality to me. Yep. I mean, Twitter's not going to do anything that is not in line with strict federal and state regulations where they can work. So, I mean, this is not surprising. I'm just pumped that they're advertising for cannabis. And I think they will grow as the industry is allowed to grow. I don't know. Yeah. Do you have any thoughts on that, Javi?
No, I think it's a cool step. I was really excited about the news as well. It's more symbolic than anything, right? It doesn't change much, but it's symbolic.
I could change some. I mean, Trulieve is already diving in. They must see some ROI with it, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's few platforms for cannabis companies to spend their ad dollars. Benzinga.
I'm just saying.
You know, yeah. But in reality, right, you can't take your money to Instagram or Facebook unless, you know, you circumvent some rules. You are very limited as to what you can promote on Google. Most, you know, mainstream media outlets will not take the ads either. So, you know, it's...
And here's a call for advertisers at Benzinga. We have plenty of channels. We have amazing results with the people we work with, just give us a ring, CannabisHourBenzinga.com, or just hit me on LinkedIn, whatever you want to do. Who cares? That being said, pumped for Twitter diving into the space. I think props to them. This is symbolic. I agree with you, Javi. I think there is utility to it, as we've already seen one of the largest companies in the space, third largest to be exact, dive in and dive in head first. Can I, it's not in your headline, so forgive me, but Trulieve, giving another $5.5 million. So we're just talking about them giving another $5.5 million to the Florida state ballot process. So lobbying for it still, I think that makes over $25 million now they've given to the initiative in the state. So just going to continue on the Trulieve train, throw that in there. Obviously, they stand to gain a lot more than they're giving if they do get it passed at the end of next year. But I'm glad that they're putting their wallet where their mouth is.
Indeed.
Keep it going.
You're also excited about Tilt Holdings, right? Tilt
Always.
Holdings has announced a series of transactions that have reduced its outstanding debt by 47% year over year. The company has repaid $2 million of debt, retiring the remainder of its 2019 senior debt facility with no further obligations.
That seems like good news to me, right? Am I missing anything there? Stock was down earlier today.
Interesting. I have no idea why, honestly.
It's just cannabis. That's the reason. It's cannabis stock. But, I mean, props to Tilt. Gary Santo been working. Lynn Ricci been working. You know, the team over there is really making strides, and they are a very unique company. They are a brand builder. They support a lot of cool brands like Toast, like a Black Buddha. I mean, there's a number that they support in their dispensaries and otherwise, and they're going to be speaking on brands at our bzcannabis.com, Benzinga's Miami Cannabis Capital Conference in April. That's my plug. All right, Javi, to you, man. Keep it rolling.
I'm just looking at the numbers a little bit, right? Like, so basically what Tilt did was repay, like, what, $40 million? I struggle to understand that, right? Like, they...
I think they refinanced $40. Well, no. So it was over the past, like, year and a half. So if you read the press release, it's since December 2021.
Yeah.
That they had, like, $80-some million dollars, now down to $40-some million dollars. Mm-hmm. So they paid a lot off over the last year and 2 months. And I don't think that is, I think they just use that higher number as reference. But they have basically extended the maturity of the majority of the remaining debt while paying off, I think, some like different forms of like a $2 million loan here, $7 million loan here. That was my understanding, Javi. I'm not sure if you got anything different from that.
No, I'm probably just learning from you right now.
Keep it going, brother. What else we got, man? There's so much news happening today. It was Private Placement Thursday when I did Cannabis Daily this morning.
Shoot. Tell us about it.
Dude, we had Zebra Brands, that's X-E-B-R-A Brands, do a private placement, I think up to $600K. We had Center Brands do a private placement of up to $5 million. And then there was another company I can't remember off the top of my head. Oxley, thank you. They did I think they just closed a $3.36 million private placement. Yep. But all those stocks, last time I checked, were up. So shareholders liking the any movement of capital right now in that regard.
Indeed. There's two very interesting analyst notes from our good friend Pablo Swanich at Cantor Fitzgerald.
Pablo!
You can go check him out in detail at benzinga.com/cannabis after the show. One of them looked into Ayr Wellness, that is AYRWF. He says this company cuts costs to build meaningful debt. And, you know, shares a little bit of his thoughts ahead of Q4 earnings. Ultimately, he remains neutral on the stock and has a price target of 138. Pretty low. It's
Well, let's compare to other stocks here, though. Let's be fair. It is low though.
Yeah, lower in price targets.
Left and right. Ayr Wellness is they're top 10 size wise, right? Like market cap wise in the US. They're definitely top 15. There's only 15 companies that have like above 100 million market cap. But I'm pretty sure they're like, I think Ascend is 8. I think Verano is 4 or 5. Trulieve's 3, GTI 2, Cureleaf 1. But I think the remaining five, I think Arrow's in there somewhere. So that's it's representative of a tough industry right now, man.
It is, man. It's tough times all around. We were, you know, we were discussing earlier, like, stock performance in general, and, you know, it's been a bloodbath. It's been a bloodbath. It's
well, I will say, you know, we'll put the negative spin on it because that is there, and we do not ignore, you know, that just to be sunshine pumpers here. But I will say it is somewhat exciting and not said lightly to see who is able to right the ship this year. Who is able to come out on the other side? Obviously, that takes a lot of resources that you either already have and or you need from your network, which is why you come to events like Benzinga. We don't just host events to get our friends together. We host events to help grow businesses, right? I mean, they're our friends too, so there's that. But that being said, y'all, do what you can. You know, meet new people, find these resources, and get through the finish line of 2023, because I think those who make it through this year, you know, there's greener grass in the next 18 months, after the next 18 months.
100%. 100%. Well, I hope so, at the very least. People, you know, smart people seem to be cautiously optimistic, but, you know.
Are you calling me smart, Javi?
Always.
Are you calling me smart? Oh, man, look at him blowing some smoke up at me right now.
The other news out of Cantor Fitzgerald, or the other reports, looked into Aurora Cannabis ACB after Q2 earnings. Swanix once again remains overweight on the company, but lowered again his price target from $3 to $2.35 on a general, like, sectoral derating.
Now, if you all know anything about analyst notes, they generally write the same thing in the first line for similar companies. So when I look at this, and, you know, I think the price target is a big tell for, you know, Pablo's thoughts on the overall market right now. Mm-hmm. But Aurora's doing fine. Aurora's actually been pretty good.
But it's burning a bunch of cash.
It is. All cannabis companies are. That's what they do. It's like a definition.
Yeah, but it's
so... Name me one cannabis company that doesn't burn cash.
No, very few. I can't. Definitely not off the top of my head. That's for sure. But I mean, it's still concerning to see that kind of cash burn. On the other hand, lower interest costs and all this, like, repayment of debt that they've been doing, better working capital management will likely help these financial trends going forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see. You know, I don't take anything away from Pablo's note. I think that man knows a lot more about capital markets than I do. But when it comes to the space as a whole right now, Aurora has had much tougher times that we've seen and covered on this show than what they're going through right now.
Yeah. And then the other interesting thing about Aurora is it's privileged position in Germany, right? Mm-hmm. We still don't know if legalization in Germany for adult use is going to happen or not, and or when it is going to happen, actually. But it is very well positioned, right? ACB is only one of three domestic licensed producers. So, you know, this is an 80 million people market. I think that is also...
Well, as Germany goes, so do several other markets. Several other markets. I mean, you'll have the Netherlands follow very... I mean, if they're not already leading, but you know what I mean. They're market-wise, they'll follow. But I don't know. I'm not necessarily bearish on an international play like Aurora. I'm not bearish on an international play like Tilray, albeit two very different feelings.
I'm sure there's a reason why Pablo is more optimistic on, or more bullish on Aurora than on Air Wellness, right? When supposedly the big market is the U.S. Supposedly Canada has reached its full potential, right? Mm-hmm. But it seems, you know, like these players have already, as the you know, Patrick Gray was saying on Tuesday, many of these Canadian players have already recognized that they have hit that ceiling in Canada and have, you know, started looking outward.
So I have, you know, let's get some audience participation at some point in this. You guys, drop your questions in the chat if you are listening live. If you're listening later on, shoot your questions to us. We love hearing from you guys. You give us some great insights on what you want to hear. I'd love to hear what you all think of these new markets coming online. What is the most exciting market to you? That's my question for you. I'm super excited with how Missouri is rolling out. I mean, they are just snowballing downhill.
Yep.
Super cool. I hear a lot of excitement about Maryland, you know, even though their medical sales went down pretty significantly in January. Maryland seems to be on the tip of tongues right now, probably due to the different large markets of urban buyers there. But I mean, Javier, what do you think, man?
I was muted. And I am always excited with every market that comes online, to be very
great answer. I love that answer.
But I do feel excited about Missouri and how fast things are moving. The early results are very encouraging.
Do you think that'll affect Illinois? Probably, right?
A lot of people came into Illinois from neighboring states, right, to get cannabis. That was no secret. Illinois itself, you know, the state government recognized that a big part of cannabis revenue and cannabis tax revenue came from out of state visitors. So I'm sure it will affect Illinois to a certain point. But I'm also pretty convinced that the Illinois market continues to establish itself, right? And people are becoming more and more used to legal cannabis retail, right? So I do trust that more and more people will continue to convert to the legal market from illicit markets, and that could make up for a portion of.
One last point to that, and then we got to get our guest over. Yes. But we California. Giving a $20 million grant program, I don't know if you saw that, to expand cannabis into underserved areas and markets within the state. I thought that was really cool. Props to California on that one, obviously. Hopefully it creates more opportunity for cannabis brick and mortars there. But we'll see. With that being said, we really need to get to our guests now. I love the conversation, Javi. You're a man of many talents and knowledges. Love you.
I wasn't enlightened.
So, you were always enlightened. You
know, like, so I don't know. Like, I'm always happy.
You're the man. We love you. That said, let's bring over our guest, the CEO of Filament Health, Ben Lightburn. Ben, how are you, sir? Welcome in.
Doing very well. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. Where are you calling from?
From my house in beautiful West Vancouver, British Columbia.
I hear nothing but like Vancouver is perfect on all times.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely got its attractive points. You know, we have ski hills just above the town, and you know, we got lush evergreen forest as you can see. But you know, it's not always a complete utopian paradise.
Well, my friend, give us a little history about Filament Health. What do you do, within these emerging markets?
Sure. So Filament was started a few years ago now by myself and some colleagues from a previously exited company. We've been working in this area of botanical extraction, making natural ingredients sourced from plant sources for our whole careers. And we came out of an exit in 2018. And this is sort of right around the time when the psychedelics industry was experiencing the early stages of its renaissance. And something struck us that was a little bit unusual is that it didn't seem like there were really any companies focused on the natural side of the psychedelics industry. I mean, there were some, but by far and away, the vast amount of resources and attention were going into companies producing psychedelic substances via chemical synthesis. And you know, while there's not inherently anything wrong with making synthesized psilocybin or other compounds, we knew from our experience in the natural products industry that probably eventually psychedelic consumers would desire at least to have an option of a naturally derived product. I mean, you just have to look into the cannabis industry, right? Where people, it's all natural all the time. And, you know, sales of synthetic cannabinoids are actually much, much, much smaller than sales of natural cannabinoids. And what was very funny to us was that it seemed to be the opposite in psychedelics, which where one would expect probably an even more natural focus. So we decided to start a company to essentially give people the choice of a natural or synthetic psychedelic, knowing that we had a lot of experience in the manufacture of natural extracts for a wide variety of different industries. We had a lot of experience with GMP manufacturing and getting IP protection and having facilities and dialoguing with governmental authorities like Health Canada. So that's basically the origin story in a nutshell.
Now, I'm just pretending to be dumb here so that everybody else can benefit from this.
And pretending to look dumb too.
Yeah, right. So is natural the same thing as organic?
It's actually not the same thing as organic. So I would say organic could be considered to be a subset of natural. And when we say organic, we're talking about like USDA organic certification, like organic chemistry and organic compounds mean something different. USDA organic certification describes certain ways of growing, manufacturing, providing food products and other products like dietary supplements and things like that. It is possible to make natural things organic if you use, like, say, organic certified solvents when you're making extracts, or you only use like organic certified preservatives, and when you grow the materials, you only use organic certified antimicrobial and pest reducing agents and things like that. Our extracts, for now, they're definitely natural. What makes something natural is that they get extracted from a natural source, like for instance, psilocybin from a magic mushroom or caffeine from a coffee bean. There's not necessarily any chemical difference between, say, natural psilocybin and a synthetic psilocybin, but there is a big difference between a natural extract of a magic mushroom and synthetic psilocybin. Just like in cannabis, where a natural extract of a cannabis plant will have many different cannabinoids, right? Like infinite appears. Like it seems like there's a new cannabinoid flavor of the month every single day. The same thing is actually true in psychedelics and magic mushrooms. Magic mushrooms have much more than just psilocybin in them. People report that different magic mushrooms have different effects, right? Different mushroom might make you yawn or laugh or be social or this kind of a thing. And if these effects are true, it's probably because of different amounts of these other compounds that are sitting in the magic mushroom. And so our drugs are designed to extract not just the primary compound, but the full complement in order to replicate that natural effect, as well as perhaps replicate the differences of different effects that you would get from different species and different strains.
I got to ask you about like two very hot topics, kind of clicky. One is the ayahuasca pill. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's about it.
So cool, in my opinion. How cool is that?
Like, it's insane. It's mind blowing. It's definitely like very concept bending, right? It's unexpected.
For sure, it's still early days in that research. We have done a little bit of preliminary investigation and made the first couple of extracts, and actually, sort of deciding on a kind of a recipe and a format. Ayahuasca is incredibly interesting because it's actually traditionally prepared as an extract, right? It's actually a combination of two different extracts, one that contains the DMT and one that contains compounds called MAOIs, monoamine oxidase inhibitors. And what's really fascinating to me is that the traditional, like the indigenous people in the Amazon, actually figured out that the DMT containing extract is only bioactive if it's consumed with an MAOI containing extract, because DMT is not actually bioavailable if consumed orally, right? That's actually why you see DMT vape pens, because if you inhale the vapor, you actually experience the the DMT, but it diminishes in your body really quickly because your body breaks it down, right? So you vaporize it 20, 30 minutes, 15 minutes, it's gone. If you ingest an MAOI, it prevents your body from, it's the inhibitor of the thing that makes your body break down the DMT. So it's this incredible knowledge that developed over time. And it's a really striking example of, you know, people experimenting with natural plants in their physical world, right, to come up with not just food, medicine, but also things to help them connect with their spirituality and religious sort of purposes. And this is the way it's been with human beings since the very beginning, right? For hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years. And so when people tell us, well, you know, the best way to make drugs is via chemical synthesis, we go, you know, maybe from 1950 yeah, really to 2010.
What's the goal, right?
Since the dawn of time. Sorry?
No, it really depends on what's the objective, what you're trying to accomplish with a specific drug, right? There's definitely certain drugs that are more effective in their synthesized and synthetic version, and others for other objectives that clearly are not, right? And even when it comes to let's say, for instance, psychedelic compounds or, you know, cannabinoids versus, you know, whole plant cannabis, application is everything, right? The use case is everything, right? There is no one right or wrong answer in that sense.
And with these substances like cannabinoids and like psychedelics that have been consumed by human beings for, again, thousands of years, are these really truly good fits for the traditional pharmaceutical development model? Like, this model that we've erected is really good at assessing the safety of, you know, new compounds where we don't know how the effects are going to be. But, you know, there's such a vast and rich historical library of, you know, consumption of these substances. Like, do we really need, does the pharmaceutical shoe kind of fit in this case? And for some situations, for sure, right? When we're talking about, you know, the treatment of very serious diseases and conditions, and we don't want people out there making unsubstantiated health claims, like, you know, those cannabis manufacturers got in trouble for making anti-cancer claims a little while
ago. Whoa, nobody's like, ever gotten in trouble in cannabis.
Yeah, well, nor should they have, right? Because everyone in cannabis is squeaky clean, right? You know, how dare they? How dare they impose the rules? Like, where is it in Oregon now? Everyone's all a flutter because they're going to have to test for micro and heavy metals.
Right? Oh, like, God forbid.
God forbid that we have safe products, right? Like any other industry, like if you're like, oh, I have milk, but I'm not going to test it for heavy metals or micro, like you would get laughed out of the room, right? So it's like, anyways, I lost my train of thought on that one.
Yeah, no worries. No, I really liked where we went there myself. It sounds like we're all Delta 8 fans here. big joke, what? So give me a little, can you just give us a little insight? We only have really a little bit more time here. So I'd like to get what you're doing with the Center for Addiction and I think medical or mental disease.
It's the Center for Addiction and Mental Health. It's
mental health, right.
Canada's largest mental health research center. And we've now partnered with them on, well, we've announced two clinical trials where we will be providing them the study drug, which is our PEX-10 botanical psilocybin.
That's awesome.
We're working them on two studies. One of them is actually quite interesting. The PI's name is a fellow called Ishrat Hussein. And the hypothesis is, can we get a therapeutic effect from psilocybin while actually blocking the hallucinogenic effects of the drug? So think about that for a second. Like, that's wild stuff. And while if, you know, somebody's initial reaction might be, well, we don't really want that, right? We want people to have the full psychedelic experience, and what's psychedelics without the hallucinations? Agreed. But think about if you don't have hallucinations, think about how much more accessible this medicine could be, right? For people where it could really help.
Like, huge.
100%. What if you are end of life, distress patient, and you're really nervous about a lot of things in your life? The last thing you want really is probably a 6 to 8 hour mushroom journey if you can avoid it, right?
I can't imagine a more game changing catalyst. right now outside of political.
Correct. And then you can imagine like people are taking this home and taking it and blah, blah, blah. So while the hypothesis may not fit into the sort of traditional psychedelic sense, if you actually think about it in terms of like how many people it could end up helping, it's a very, very fascinating avenue of research. So we're one way or the other, we think it's great for us, right? If you need the psychedelic effects, well, here's your psilocybin, right? If you don't need the psychedelic effects and you can take this other thing that blocks the psychedelic effects, well, you still need the psilocybin, so we can give it to you in that case as well.
I mean, just for shareholders, the amount of consumers that you, your consumer base just widens massively at that point. It's huge.
And the throughput, and you don't need to like have therapists like sitting with the people in order during their treatment, and it's accessibility, right? And the main goal of the industry and of our company is to help people that have some kind of mental health challenge. And any avenue of research, I mean, we don't really know how it's going to turn out, but any mm-hmm. avenue of research that can potentially lead to more people getting helped is, you know, very good. So we're very proud of our, you know, partnership with CAMH, as with all government and philanthropy and academic funded research. We've actually provided this study drug to them for free because we believe in kind of helping the whole ecosystem. And you know, we've now given, I think, probably 15 or 16 different trial sites all around the world study drugs for free. So this is
part of
that effort to kind of support the whole research effort. I mean, we stand on the shoulders of all the people that did all kinds of psychedelic research in the past. So this is kind of like our small way of helping to continue that tradition.
If you saw me just react there, it was like a, I don't know, like a small, I don't know, like a hurricane or something going on outside. I just got scared. Elliot was talking about investors there for a second and shareholders, right? And one of the things that I really like to see in the psychedelics industry, and this started happening since the early days of the capital markets for psychedelics companies, several mainstream investors like Peter Thiel or Kevin O'Leary got invested into the industry. In your case, and in Filament's case, you saw early support from Brock Pierce. Can you tell us a little bit about you know how that happened and what it meant for the company and what you think it means for the wider psychedelic industry? Right, it's to me at least it's very validating to see these mainstream, more traditional investors.
It is validating. Some of the people you mentioned have some sort of controversy associated with them, right? Like you see Elon Musk chiming in every so often into psychedelics Twitter, right? And everyone goes, "Oh, you know, is this the sign of the next things to come?" It is validating. I think early on when Filament was getting started, this was also during the last sort of crypto boom as well. Right. It was the everything boom. Right. COVID 2020, early 2021. And what's really good about crypto investors is that they see the vision. They see the future of the world that includes a new innovation like crypto or like psychedelics. They know it's going to be a bumpy road to get there. Especially crypto investors. I mean, how many winters have they been through, right? We're only on our first psychedelics winter right now. And you know, they're not concerned about what they see as, you know, minor fluctuations in the present day, which will pale in comparison to the overall impact that we'll see. We just have to be patient. So I think psychedelics did attract a fair amount of that same kind of crypto vibe, or there's also similar kind of anarchic, you know, screw you, the man kind of vibe as well.
Yeah. Anti-establishment. Anti-establishment, anti-status quo.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but in the case of psychedelics, it's the establishment that's kept these valuable life-saving medicines out of the hands of the people for decades and decades. So I think it's very fair to be, you know, anti-establishment in psychedelics, although I should be very careful because the number of licenses and permits and things we have from the establishment, which allow us to operate legally is extensive. So we're very thankful. Yeah,
but it's a challenge. It's a challenge to what was conceived to be acceptable, to what was regulated until very recently. Of course, now you got to play by the rules, right? You gotta get the right permits. You gotta license. You gotta get your licenses. You gotta protect your intellectual property. You gotta comply with publicly traded, company regulations and SEC regulations, right?
And not only that, we have to comply with what's the sort of general feeling by the psychedelics community and how to be an ethical player and how to do the right things and sort of like abide by some more like unwritten rules and history, while also kind of challenging certain areas which may need like a refresh, adhering to like modern research standards and providing standardized products and things like that, and saying like, well, hey, like again, like if these substances are going to reach the most number of people, well, people like average people that are suffering from serious illnesses, they're probably not going to be comfortable with the inherent variability of the psilocybin in a magic mushroom, right? They're going to want a standardized product that says 25 milligrams. They're not going to want something that says, plus or minus, 50% psilocybin.
Or half a gram, like magic mushrooms, half a gram. It's like, how much psilocybin? It's like, I don't know, like half a gram in mushrooms.
I took some last week. It seemed to be pretty strong, but I don't know.
You guys are really selling this for me.
I know it's crazy, but that's actually it. One of the things I always tell people is like when someone says they did XYZ grams of shrooms, it's actually a completely meaningless number, because what we see is that mushrooms from the same flush can have up to five times the amount of psilocybin as the mushroom next door, right? Even within the same mushroom, you see a cap that has like double the amount of psilocybin as a stem, right? So like, it's like I took, and the cap and the stem could each be 500 milligrams in some cases, right? Mm-hmm. So like a whole dose for someone might have been just a stem or just a cap. So how much psilocybin did you get? I don't know. Like the only way is to take a large quantity of mushrooms, grind them up so that they're, not that I condone illegal drug use, obviously, but like if you take a whole batch and a big batch, like a kilo or two, and grind it up and homogenize it, somehow analyze that, and then you have like a big batch of powder that is relatively the same concentration of psilocybin.
Awesome. Ben, we are over time, man, but well worth it. Your insights are awesome. Really appreciate what you're doing and offering your product as a base for these clinical studies at multiple different sites. It's very important. What you're doing. I don't want us to skate over that, but thank you so much for your time. Any last words and anything our audience should know as we wrap up here?
No, I think, one last pet peeve of mine while we're on the subject of pet peeves, the use of the word psilocybin to refer both to the chemical compound as well as to the mushroom. This is also something that has to stop, right? You don't grow psilocybin, right? A coffee bean is not caffeine. You don't grow caffeine. You grow coffee. You don't grow THC. So anyways, that's just the last thing. So
I love it.
We need to get smarter on that nomenclature, right?
That's fantastic. I love that. Best last line ever, Ben. Best last line ever. Ben Lightburn, CEO and co-founder of Filament Health, OTC listed FLHLF. Thank you so much for your time, sir. We hope you'll join us in Miami at our Psychedelic Capital Conference. But until then, my friend, be well and keep up the good fight.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Awesome. Great, great interview. I mean, the man has a ton of knowledge, almost as much as you, Javi.
Nah, I want more. Stop it already. But, I loved it. And I loved the closing phrase, actually. Honestly, I get very, very bothered and disturbed and annoyed with the same thing. It's like, even friends of mine will go like, oh yeah, I took some psilocybin. It's like, no, you took shrooms, right? Again, you have no idea how many milligrams. So yeah. Like, don't, It's super weird. No one is saying, hey, let's smoke some THC. You go like, let's smoke a joint.
Yeah, fair enough, man. Fair enough. With that being said, y'all, we have to wrap up. Javi, you are rock. You are rock. You rock. You're awesome. Benzinga.com/cannabis for all of Javier and his team's amazing news throughout the day. BZCannabis.com or scan the QR code in the top right of this screen on the video if you're watching. If you're listening to this later on, BZCannabis.com for tickets to our awesome event. We have confirmed representatives Dave Joyce and Troy Carter from the U.S. House of Representatives. We have some amazing companies to be announced, y'all, but all the major cannabis players will be there as always. BZCannabis.com, April 11th through 12th, April 13th, Psychedelics Capital Conference. And I'm talking too fast, and I'm done. Of course it worked. We are awesome here, Javi. That being said, y'all, have a great rest of your day. We will see you on Tuesday for some more amazing insights. Until then, y'all.